Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning and welcome to the Morning Briefing for Wednesday, September 20th, 2017. I'm your host, Eric Dame. Jake Hughes is your producer, and we've got a great show headed your way. First, we're going to talk to our VA reporter, Jonathan Kopanger, about the new RAND study that tries to show us how repealing the ACA might affect the Department of Veterans Affairs. Later, we'll be joined by representatives from the American Legion and Bunker Labs DC. We're going to talk to them about the various programs offered by the Legion and Bunker Labs to those vets who are looking to go into business for themselves. And then David Blanco, one half of the father-son duo behind Blanco Cigars, he's going to join us live over the phone. Now, not only are David and his father, Cesar, in business together now, they've both served in the United States Army. It's a fascinating story, and they'll be joining us in about an hour to tell it. So, yeah, we got the goodness for you today, and it all starts now as we welcome Jonathan Kopanger into the studio. Jonathan, how are you today?
I could have used a couple more hours of sleep, but other than that, I'm doing okay.
This was one of those weird days where I got plenty of sleep. I went to sleep earlier than normal last night. I even woke up a couple times throughout the night like, oh, I feel pretty well rested. Oh, it's only 3 o'clock in the morning.
No, I love those times.
I'm going back to sleep. And then, you know, when you wake up and it's 3 o'clock, you go back to sleep. And then an instant later, it's like, oh, man, now it's actually time to get up. But yeah, I've still got a little bit of I could go back to sleep for about 4 or 5 hours right now.
Couldn't easily. We all
easily. But Jonathan, of course, is our crack VA reporter who is keeping an eye on everything that takes place over there and everything that takes place in regard to there. The VA study, like this new RAND study. So tell us about it.
Well, okay, so before RAND did this, the AHCA, the American Health, I don't know what all these acronyms, so all of these new health studies are, not health studies, see, I really should have had more sleep, or at least more coffee, this is kind of crazy. All right, so RAND did the study before Bernie Sanders was able to submit his thing for the single payer, so that's not included in this study. I was trying to say that, but it was very difficult to get that out.
Mm.
So what RAND discovered was before the Obamacare was passed, about 9.1% of veterans under age 65 were uninsured. Okay, that fell to 5.8 by 2015. So a good chunk of veterans under the age 65 got some insurance under Obamacare. What that equates to is if they were back in the system, that would be 125,000 more office visits, 15,000 more inpatient surgeries, and 375,000 more prescriptions.
Hmm.
So that's just for under 65.
Right.
So if you go for over 65, it's going to be a lot more.
Yeah.
And I can't find my numbers. My iPad is dying on me again.
Oh, it happens. I mean, it's an interesting subject, and there are a lot of different opinions on it. There are those who would say, okay, so we've got Senator Sanders with his ideas of a single-payer health care system, which essentially would have the government more involved in your health care,
right.
Which those who are taking part in the VA system, many of them say that's not really something that you want. You may think you want it, but it may not be because of a lot of the things that we've talked about on the show where bureaucracy comes into everything.
Yeah.
And if we're talking about, you know, repealing the Obamacare, as it's known, the American Care Act, that it would cause more people who had separate insurance to come back to the VA. Well, if we go to a single payer system that's essentially run by the government, mm-hmm. Then we're going to have a lot more than that coming into it. So there's a lot of angles of this. A lot of different people have different opinions. Of course, I can tell you my father, who is a small business owner, not a fan,
right?
Not a fan of the current healthcare system because,
well, the current healthcare system is broken. I mean, there's just no other way to describe it. It's broken. Instead of fighting over it, maybe come up with some solutions to fix it. That's just my opinion.
Right.
Going back, my iPad's back working. So going back to the study, only 56.8% of veterans, again, we're talking under 65, over 65, that's going to be a whole other ball of wax. Only 56% of veterans qualify for VA care. Mm-hmm. So you have about 40% out there that don't qualify for this. And so they rely on getting insurance some other way.
Right.
So these are the people that are really going to fall through the cracks and that don't have a place to go. Secretary Shulkin has said that they will expand, they will do whatever it takes to get this. But right now, VA can only handle about 51% of all requests for appointments. So what's going to happen if you add a whole other group in there?
Yeah. It's fascinating to see what's going to happen. Of course, there were people who told us a few years back when the ACA was put into place, this is not sustainable. This is not going to work. Premiums are going to go up. And as politicians often do, of course, I remember you can, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. Not true. Premiums won't go up. Not true. I mean, there's been a lot of issues with healthcare. And I think the question is, what do we do? Because that was the idea that was put forward by the Democrats. Now the Republicans have their idea that the Democrats have issues with. The healthcare that's being put forward or has been put forward, it's been shot down a couple of times now by the Republicans who are in power. The funny thing is that some of them were saying like, well, you know, we can't tell you exactly what's in it. When it gets passed, you'll be able to see what's in it. You had a lot of the Democrats saying, well, how is that acceptable? Well, wait a second. Wasn't it just a couple of years ago that Ms. Pelosi was up there saying you just have to pass it to find out what's in it?
Yeah, I mean, but they do the that same one was thing. That, the one from a couple of years ago was out there for a whole year. There was debate for a whole year. This is a whole different thing because they're just kind of ram this through.
Right.
I'm not trying to pick sides. No. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I would think that we could look at other countries that have this. They've already taken care of this. Let's look at them and see what best practices are going on and then come up with something that works for us. Why start it all new? It doesn't make sense to me.
Part of the problem that I've heard a lot of people who know a lot more about this than I do is that the other companies, the other countries that have it don't have anywhere near the population that we do. We're talking, you know, England, which has about a tenth of the population that we do, something like that. Aren't they like 35 million people? We're 350 million people. It's on such a much larger scale where, you know, if you think about any social program, when you're doing it with 100 people, it's a lot easier than when you're doing it with 1 million people. I mean, it's a difficult thing. And it's one that, of course, everyone is interested in their own health. Everyone, to an extent, is interested in the health of others. However, not everyone is willing to take the hit for other people because, you know, for whatever reason. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with it. And if any sort of government-based single-payer plan comes into play, again, the only thing that we have to look at as an example of what that might be like is the VA. And we've had a lot of problems with the VA on a much smaller scale than it would be if it was the entire population. It's just going to be interesting to see.
Well, if, and this is coming from Rand, if the AHCA would pass, that's going to increase uninsurance among veterans and demand care from VA. And it's going to go back to the levels before Obamacare was passed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to even be worse than that. So more people are going to lose insurance on that one. This is going to affect the older, low-income, less healthy veterans.
Right.
And the areas that it's going to affect most, and this is for the VA only, it's going to be Arkansas, Kentucky, and Louisiana. They're going to be pretty much decimated. The VA there is going to be decimated. And we're already having problems with some of those places.
Hmm.
So I just think that these people need to, and when I say these people, it means our leaders need to just take a step back and look at this and quit trying to play politics because we've got people that it's their life.
Yeah, and unfortunately, this is what politicians do.
I know.
It's what they do.
I could never do it.
And if we go to the single payer, the government funded healthcare, guess who's going to be in charge of that?
Right.
The politicians. I mean, it's we're in a bit of a lose-lose situation where we've had a program in place for a while now that a lot of people had some serious issues with. Some people liked it. Some people hated it. And now it's been shown that it's collapsing, and the plan for that was not sustainable, which, to be fair, is what the other side said when it was put in, like in a couple of years is going to be a big problem. Well, now the AHCA, not to be confused with the ACA, the new program that's being put forth, the people on the other side are saying the same thing, that it's not sustainable, and they may both be right. I mean, they need to find something that's going to work well for everybody.
And maybe instead of just trying to poke holes in this stuff, maybe look at it, and instead of saying, well, this isn't going to work, figure out what's not going to work and fix it.
Yeah.
How about do your job?
Yeah, that would be a good thing. That would be a good thing. You know, a lot of people do talk about the single payer, and in the veteran community, from a lot of veterans that I know, particularly retirees and people who stay in the VA system for an extended period of time, mm-hmm. that is not what they want. They do not want the government more involved in their health care. And I think that's from their experience with the VA. There are a lot of people who, and we've talked about it so much, the care at the VA is just fine. And the doctors, yeah. if the government takes over health care in the United States, the doctors are going to be the same doctors that are doing it in the private sector. Although, even in places like Canada and England, you still have private specialists yeah. where you have the choice like, well, the government will pay for you to go to this guy, or you can pay to go to this guy
exactly.
or this lady. I mean, you have those options. And as great as Canada's healthcare system is often portrayed to be, as a former curler, of course, you know, the sport curling, I know a lot of Canadians, and a lot of them come down to the United States for specific healthcare concerns because they just don't, one, they have to wait in line up in Canada, two, the level of care is not always yeah. the same. What I've always heard from my Canadian friends, of which I have quite a few, is that if you have a cold or you have the flu, mm-hmm. their healthcare system is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
If you have something any more serious than that, you're going to start wanting to look at the private sector.
Well, and you know, this is all good, but if you have talking to somebody who doesn't have any health insurance, then it's, you know, something's better than nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually have a couple friends that only have insurance because of the American Healthcare Act.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to think about what happens to them. And
yeah.
like y'all are saying, there is no easy answer. There's no way to say this right here, this side's right, this side's wrong. It's got to come together. The politicians have to come together and meld their ideas into yeah. something that works.
That's the easy answer. The easy answer is politicians need to stop putting politics into this and start thinking about American people.
Mm.
Veterans, non-veterans alike.
Well, don't we also, though, have, I mean, one, if you are in, if you are seriously injured at the emergency room, they're, mm-hmm. they are not allowed to turn people away who are in danger. And also free clinics. I mean, there is medical care available out there to people. And I've heard that argument put forth. Like, listen, you may not get the greatest health care, but that's kind of how it sometimes works in yeah. a capitalist system, where if you've done the things you needed to do to succeed, then you can do this. The issue that we have, I think, is looking at those older, as you said, the older veterans in particular, no income or low income
yeah.
as they get older. And the only option for them is that free health care that's available at a clinic or at the emergency room,
mm-hmm.
which if you have to go to the emergency room, you've waited until it's a very severe emergency.
Right.
And if it's a long-term condition, say a cancer or something like that, you can't go to the emergency room every week for your treatment.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not the way it works. So, you know, we do have things like Medicare, Medicaid. There are things in this country, some that work, some that don't. It's a messy issue. It's one where a lot of people go, well, why can't we be more like Canada or the UK? And then other people point at Canada and the UK and point out the severe issues that they have there. You also have the crazy people who are like, well, in Cuba, they don't have to pay for anything. Yeah, in Cuba, their healthcare isn't quite the greatest in the world. They do have great research programs, partially because they don't have the same rules and regulations
right.
that we do. So they're allowed to do things that we're not. But yeah, this is a messy issue, and one that, as we just learned from Jonathan Kopanger, very well may affect the VA no matter what happens. I mean, under the current healthcare system in the country, there are going to be issues for the VA and others going forward. And if they put in this new one that's been proposed, there will be issues at the VA and other places going forward. We don't have that thing. We haven't gotten to that place where we have the one where everybody goes, ah, okay.
Exactly.
Do you think, because there are a lot of people out there who are just full of hatred for the current president. not always a fan of what he does, not
right.
always hating what he does. I like to look at things pragmatically. If he were somehow able to round it up and get the healthcare issue fixed, do you think that might turn a bunch of people around on him?
I will speak only for myself, and I'm probably going out on a ledge to do this. No.
Do it.
Do your job. Do your job. Quit messing around. Quit doing all this other stuff. Quit lying. Quit doing all that horrible stuff that we all can't stand. Do your job, and then I will be appreciative of that.
Yeah. The one thing that I will say is no one's been able to do it before. So whoever it is that is able to do that, whether it's a senator who gets everybody rounded up, whether it's a couple of senators on both sides that get together, get it straightened out, congressman, the president, whomever it is, that person's going to have some pretty good publicity.
Yeah, right.
So you would think, since this is a group of people who are all about publicity because it helps them get votes, you would think that they would be wanting to do that. But again,
that could be the problem because they all want to be the one that has their name on it.
They all want to be the glory boy or girl.
I don't have the answers, but I'll sure stir up the pot any chance I get.
There you go. And he'll keep an eye on everything over at the VA that's going on because, well, that is his job. We're also joined, you heard him chime in just a moment ago, by Jake Hughes, producer of this very program in studio, and we're checking in on non-smoking watch day two. Of course, Jake is in the process of quitting smoking, and you'll be able to follow his progress through videos that are up on our Facebook page, where we are at Connecting Vets, as well as articles on the website. So Jake, you are now, yesterday, let's be honest, you weren't even 24 hours into this thing.
Right. I
mean, come on, that was nothing. Now, you're over a full day in. You're like a day and a half into this process after having your last cigarette on Monday afternoon, early afternoon. How you feeling? How you doing? Did you have any lapses?
Nope, no lapses. I will admit, it's easier than I thought it would be. Now, let me preface that by saying I'm on the patch.
It's easier right now.
Yeah, it's easier right now.
Okay.
And so I'm using the patch. So it was a constant thing of, hey, just go smoke one cigarette. Just one. It'll be fine. But the problem is one becomes two, becomes four, becomes eight, and then you're done. So it was a little difficult. But as for right now, I got to be honest, I feel okay. I'm a little jittery, and it's always there nagging in the back of my mind. Why don't you just step outside real quick? You know,
Talking about you feel jittery. I mean, is there anything else that you could really isolate physically that you're feeling now that you don't have that nicotine coming in? Well, you do have the patch, so that's giving you a little bit.
Exactly. I feel like a little, like my heart rate's elevated a little bit.
Okay.
But other than that, I really can't tell a difference.
Have you found
the mental part,
like nervous things that you're doing with your hands or anything like that yet?
No, y'all know me. I'm kind of twitchy to begin with. So, but not really. I mean, I know I have been snacking more. Like I've been eating some healthy stuff. Like in my last video, I told you, if you're going to snack, snack healthy.
Good.
But eating some almonds at home, I got some carrot sticks and I've been going on walks with my dog and doing all these other things to try to keep my mind off of it. And it's been working.
Good.
I had those, healthy snack yesterday, jalapeno Cheetos.
Jalapenos. Those are so healthy.
Oh, yeah. Jalapenos, a vegetable.
Yeah.
Cheetos are part of dairy, I believe.
I think so, something.
There's like a gram of protein in a bag of Cheetos.
It's got cheese right in the title of it. It can't be that bad for you. Would that weird little cheetah thing lie to me? You remember those when the commercials got really weird for that company? Where it was like
dangerously cheesy.
He would make people do horrible things like throw rocks at people working at a hotel or whatever. But, the healthy food thing, you've got the nicotine patch, something that I meant to ask you yesterday, I don't believe I did though, was have you looked at any of the programs that are available from like the VA that might help you with stopping smoking or anything else that's out there?
Yes, I have. The VA does have programs that can help. They have smoking cessation programs. They have counseling available.
There's an app that you could download.
There is an app for that. There's an app for everything these days.
There is.
And if you talk to your VA doctor, you can get prescribed Chantix. Now, the only warning I have about Chantix is people talk about how it makes you have nightmares. For me, it was just very vivid dreams because nicotine is a bit of a stimulant.
Yeah.
So because it's in your system. So I have weird dreams to begin with. So my day starts out with me waking up going, what the heck is wrong with me?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where you have those dreams. Medication can have that effect on you.
Yep.
I have enough vivid dreams, and it's only like once or twice a month where I wake up and I'm like, oh, okay, that's not my life. Like I've lived a period of time in these dreams and started thinking like, all right, so this is what I do. This is who I am. Turns out it's not true.
Let me ask you something, Eric.
Yeah.
When you were deployed, did you have the dream?
Which dream
where you go home?
No.
You never had that dream?
No.
Oh, everyone I talked to during my deployment had that dream where you're home with your family and then you wake up and the first thing you feel about your side is your rifle and you're just like, oh.
This is the dream I had. So I was at Fort Dix for some training before we headed over to Afghanistan. And then We had like a 3-day break, and I'm from around that area. Mm-hmm. We couldn't leave the state of New Jersey, the great state of New Jersey. So I visited some friends. I visited my mom for a couple of days. She happened to be in New Jersey curling, actually. So there you go. It's the common theme second this reference. Morning. Hey, the sport of curling doesn't get too many U.S. broadcasting references. So here I am helping out the cause of curling. So the dream I had after I got back from those few days off, then we had another day or so before we flew out. I dreamed that we got there. My group flew in to Afghanistan. And as we landed, there was an attack on the airport that we were landing at. Of course, we landed at Bagram. But in my dream, what I realized, as it was happening, first we got there, it's being attacked and we didn't have ammunition. Mm-hmm. So we're all running around like, where's the bullets? Where's the bullets? And then I realized that it wasn't actually Afghanistan. It was a little bit too forested to be the Bagram area. It was the forest moon of Endor from Star Wars. Yeah. And I was like, wait a second. And then I saw an Ewok and I was like, all right, this isn't real. And then I woke up. But for a short while, it was terrifying. And then when I actually got to Bagram, as our plane landed, doing one of those fun Air Force combat landings that the pilots like to do on a C-17. If you haven't done it, essentially, they come in, I don't know, more than a 45-degree angle, and then at the very last minute, pull up and go, and you're like, yeah. They don't tell you that it's coming. Things start flying from behind you. As we came in, there was a mortar attack on Bagram Air Base, and I think they actually hit like a small Cessna aircraft that was there. For some reason, I feel like it may have been a Canadian one. So as we came in, there are air raid sirens going off, and I'm like, I don't see any Ewoks, though. So my dream's not coming true.
Get the tree trunks right ready. The walkers are coming.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of those things. But when we get back to Jake's quitting smoking, again, go to ConnectingVets.com and follow us on social media. We're Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, at Connecting Vets. You'll see his videos and the articles. So you've looked into those programs. You've looked into all of that. Now, have you considered any of those, we'll call them tertiary treatments, those little outside-the-box things like hypnotism or anything like that?
I'm not into the whole holistic thing, man. I not to harsh anyone's mellow or anything, but I don't believe in that kind of stuff. I'm sticking with what works. Because I quit smoking for 2 years while I was stationed in South Korea. What happened after that was I got on the drill sergeant trail, and life became a whole lot more stressful. So that's when I picked up the habit again. But when I first quit, it was using the patch, and that's why I'm on that again. And that's sort of your mini tip for the day is try, if it's really hard for you to go cold turkey. My sister, Jennifer, she quit cold turkey, and she tells me it's one of the hardest things she's ever had to do, and she's given birth. So it's difficult. So if you really are having a hard time with it, look at the patch, the gum. Talk to your doctor about Chantix. I sound like an infomercial. Talk to your doctor about Chantix.
or any of the other medications that are offered. Some people I know have moved to the e-cigarette because it gives you the nicotine and essentially water vapor, and they seem to think that that makes them feel a little bit healthier. And you can also, I know because I used them for a little while. As I mentioned yesterday, I still occasionally smoke, mostly while I'm driving to and from work. I had my last one this morning in the pack that I had bought a few days ago. So I'm going to also attempt, again, not with the spotlight of a website on me, but I'm going to also attempt to just cut it out 100%. You know, the medication, the gum, there are different ways that you can try to get through it. The patch, as Jake is doing, and also, have you been able to find things to keep yourself occupied? I know you're actually kind of lucky, a fortuitous addition to your family. You just got a dog a couple days ago, so that's got to be taking up some of your time as you're trying to train the dog. But what else have you found that's really helping you keep that little cancer stick out of your hand?
Well, I'll actually give you a little preview of what today's video is going to be about.
Ooh, it's where's our breaking news
But what it is, it's about replacing habits. Like, for example, when I work here, I usually smoke once an hour, sort of a way to get downstairs, get away from the desk, hit things with fresh eyes when I come back. So now, when I go downstairs, instead of smoking, I'll walk a lap around the building. Yeah. Or when I'm at home, I wouldn't smoke inside my house. I have a little patio, like a outside, and I'll go out there and I'll, you know, just drink, I'll drink a soda or something, you know, something just sort of occupy my time, but I'm still having that habit of going out there. Because it's hard to not only break the physical addiction and the mental addiction, but also the habit part of it. Mm. So if you can keep some of those habits going for a short time, it can help you take your mind off it.
I think the habit is a big thing for me. Like being in the Navy and being on a ship, a lot of people hated the smokers, and I was one of the smokers, because we were able to just leave and go off the ship and, and take a break to go out to the smoke deck, as it was called. When you're in port, typically you had to go off the ship and down to the pier. That's where the smoke deck was. By the time I left the Navy, when I joined, it was just on the ship while you were in port. Like things changed a lot. And then in the welding shop, the smoking lamp was lit there because they were welding.
Yeah.
You can go in there. If you knew the hull technicians and the other guys who welded, you could go in there with them. But it was a good way to take a break. And it was one of the only ways, because if you didn't smoke and you were trying to just leave the office for 10, 15 minutes every hour, they're not letting that happen.
Which is so random, because you're not doing anything to damage yourself, but still you can't go take a break.
No. Like, well, if you're on the ship, you're working.
Right.
So okay, well, I'm going to take up smoking.
Yeah, so I have a break.
It's that trade-off. You get the 10-minute break, but you also have a 1 in 3 chance of dying a horrible death.
Yeah.
You know,
even
pros and cons, pros and cons.
It's interesting that the military for so long was so conducive to smoking.
Yeah.
I knew people who actually literally took up smoking just so they could get out of their shop to go on those breaks. Smoking was so common.
In the office.
So open. Oh, yeah, in the office, after it was already illegal to do so in other businesses. But Jake Hughes, man of the hour, man of the weeks, the coming days, months, years, and man for longer than he would have been if he didn't quit smoking. He's trying to quit smoking. You can follow that at Connecting Vets on social media and ConnectingVets.com. The American Legion and Bunker Labs right after this.
As a military veteran, you know there are things you and fellow vets understand and feel that others may not get.
That's where CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com comes in. Connecting Vets Every Day, a nationwide digital portal connecting military veterans to the information and advice we need to thrive.
Live daily briefings.
Informative and fun.
And all sorts of podcasts by veterans for veterans.
Sponsored by Freedom Mortgage and Harley Davidson.
Welcome back to the Morning Briefing. Wednesday, September 20th, 2017 edition. Thank you so much for joining us. We're hoping to hear from David Blanco of Blanco Cigars. However, he has yet to call in. Don't know if, you know, they're still having phone issues. He's down in the Miami area, I believe. So, you know, they could still be having some issues, Jonathan.
Yeah, there's going to be some,
some more issues coming as well. Because as we were just talking about during the break, Hurricane Maria.
Yeah.
Which I seem to remember a previous Hurricane Maria, and you know, a lot of people think, no, all the hurricanes, they only use one name. Nah, they retire names if it's a particularly
bad one. Yeah.
If it's not, then they keep that name circulating. But then when I looked it up yesterday, I did not notice any previous Hurricane Marias, at least not during my lifetime. So,
is there a Mary anywhere?
I don't know. Gloria, I remember.
Yeah.
Gloria actually made it up to, I was born in Connecticut and raised mostly in Connecticut. Hurricane Gloria actually made it up to Connecticut. We were living in Farmington, and it made it all the way up there, which is like the center of the state. So you're talking 40 miles inland from there, which is pretty rare for a storm of that type. You know, a tropical storm, essentially a hurricane is what they are, to make it up there. But Hurricane Maria now has made landfall on Puerto Rico, a place where Jonathan was stationed, a place where we still have a naval installation. For those who don't know, Roosevelt Roads.
Is it still there?
Rosie Roads, I believe, is still there, isn't it?
No.
Vieques is gone, but I thought Roosevelt Roads.
No, I think Rosie Roads is gone.
Oh, see how out of touch
I think they sold it.
Let's find out.
I was there
right now.
I forget when Hugo hit, but that was only a Category 3.
You're right. Former naval station.
Yeah.
Well, I was never stationed there, so I never
I loved Puerto Rico. I fell in love with the island. I fell in love with the Caribbean. I didn't want to go when I got orders, but I love it, love it, love it. I really think the Puerto Ricans are going to weather this.
Yeah.
They know how to handle hurricanes. They've had to deal with this before.
They've also had the smart thing of being on an island where they have a part of the benefit of being a U.S. territory and not, you know, they're not a state, but they are a territory. They have some benefit of the infrastructure of the United States government. Also, as you can tell people from having been down there, and as I can tell people from having vacationed on the island of Vieques, which many Navy vets are like, wait, you vacationed on Vieques? It's a kind of a vacation destination now.
Not
pretty
when
cool
I was
place.
There.
They make a lot of their construction is cement.
Yeah.
Because they know storms are coming through. And the hotel that we stayed at on Vieques was kind of this eco lodge type of place where there's no There was no air conditioning. Now, Puerto Rico is a hot place. You can attest to that, having lived there. The way that they set it up is that all of the buildings that you stay in, the rooms that you stay in, have a wide open side of them, and it points towards where the wind comes from typically. Nice. I believe westerly is where they come from there. They're blowing west to east, and it points in that direction and kind of cools itself down. It was brushed concrete. It was very cool. On top of the fact that it was economical and ecological. Yeah. Also, as the owners told us during the night that we got there, they had a little get together for the new visitors, that it was also designed for things like hurricanes. I mean, it's going to take a lot to blow down a thick brushed concrete building down. But then again, they haven't seen a Category 4 storm in almost 100 years. I believe it said the 1930s is what I was seeing going around since a Category 4 hit Puerto Rico.
Living through a Category 3, I can't imagine anything stronger. It's the sound of a 3. I forget how the winds, because it was back in the 80s, but we were in I was at the radio station there, and the radio station was in an old bunker, an old World War II bunker that was on the side of a hill. So we were pretty safe. As far as anything could go, but you could still hear that sound, the roar of the wind outside. It was crazy.
So here's what I just found out from looking through Wikipedia, which of course is always.
We always know that's true.
Well, here's the thing about Wikipedia. Typically it is, but you can get on there and find where people have made recent edits that haven't yet been corrected, because the community behind Wikipedia is very interested in keeping things accurate. So they say Roosevelt Roads, when it lists the dates of use for Roosevelt Roads, a naval installation on Puerto Rico, 1943 to 2004, and then 2017 to ?
Yeah. Is there...
So here's what I'm seeing. Huh. One, the United States Armed Forces keep some portions of the base open for the reserve component of the U.S. Army.
Got it.
The National Guard. And there are also, let's see what we have here. Roosevelt Roads Armed Forces. So there's a reserve center on base there. But where is this? It says 2017, but I don't know. Maybe they reopened part of it for relief efforts after these recent hurricanes, after Irma hit and all that. It could be, but for some reason, I thought Rosie Roads was still open. I knew Vieques was closed. I was in when Vieques closed down. Roosevelt Roads, apparently I was in while it closed down too, and I just didn't realize it. It was 2004. I was 6 years into a 13-year military career. I had no idea that the base closed down, but that hurricane has made landfall. 155 mile per hour winds sustained, 155 mile per hour winds for a Category 4, not gusting. So we've got our thoughts going out
absolutely
to the good folks of Puerto Rico, who are American citizens. For those people who don't know, they are American citizens. It's not a state. It's a U.S. territory, much like Guam, a place where I was stationed, unincorporated U.S. territory, not a state, but it does have all the benefits of citizenship.
I learned to lumbata in Puerto Rico by an 80-year-old woman. An 80-year-old woman taught me how to lumbata.
But Jonathan, that's the forbidden dance.
I know. It was very forbidden, but I had a blast.
I know that from the two movies that came out about lumbata in about 1985 or so.
And that's about the time I was there. Well, yeah, there a little bit later than that.
Learned how to lumbata down in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
I saw an interesting op-ed, and this was about something that I hadn't heard about. So this op-ed came from a former chief of information of the United States Navy, Admiral John Kirby.
Okay.
Retired as, a rear admiral, and now works. He wrote this op-ed, and I see it on CNN, where he works now as a national security analyst, retired as a rear admiral, was a spokesman for state and defense departments during the Obama administration, saying essentially that President Trump has proposed some sort of military parade on the 4th of July.
I saw something about that yesterday where he wants to kind of copy Bastille Day.
Which is an interesting thing because, okay, 4th of July was, I suppose there is some correlation between Bastille Day and 4th of July. 4th of July was is in honor of our independence. Mm-hmm. Bastille Day, if you don't know the story, you can look it up. We're not going to go through all of French history. But essentially, the French Revolution was kick-started, jump-started by the Bastille events. The Bastille was a big prison. Mm-hmm. They attacked it, freed a bunch of prisoners, and there you go, basically ending the monarchy there in France. You can look it up as a European studies minor during my college career. I know a little bit too much about it, but there are some connections there. But Admiral Kirby, in this op-ed that he's written, very much against it. saying he does not want a military parade, saying that's not what we need. His reasons for it essentially are, A, we're the best military in the world. We know it. We don't need
to show it off.
We don't need to show this off. And he compares it to what Kim Jong-un does in North Korea with his military parades.
Yeah.
But it's great propaganda. He says, you know, the Bastille Day parade is fantastic, and he has had the chance to attend. It's heart thumping, pulse quickening, he says, all these things, but saying we do not need it. We need a military budget. Now, of course, the Defense Authorization Act was passed, but as Admiral Kirby points out, within that Defense Authorization Act, it doesn't do anything to stop some of the automatic cuts that go into a place under the sequestering program. So he's saying, essentially, make sure that our military has what they need and don't worry about spending any money on a parade or doing anything like that.
I like our 4th of July. I like the fact that, for the most part, we try to keep it a very kind of hometowny thing where it just, you know, it's local. There are big things, but for the most part, it's about going out with your neighbors, having hot dogs, things like that. I like that. I think that that's a better way of doing it than having this big, huge military parade that just shows off weapons and destruction and forms of death. That's what they are, forms of death. I don't want to celebrate that. Sorry.
Well, that's just me. You could say that. They do have military involvement in a lot of the local parades. Like if you go to the shoreline of Connecticut, where my mother's family is from, Memorial Day, Veterans Day, 4th of July parades, all that
March
stuff.
March of the parade. Let's celebrate. I love the military. Let's do that. But
just an actual
military parade. I just don't like
parade.
That. The bombs going down and all that. I don't like that.
I think that the military members would also be against that. They're like, no, this is a holiday. I don't want to be marching in a parade. What are you talking about? Particularly the Navy.
We're not
about marching.
No.
We do learn all this close order drill at boot camp, and I understand the reason for it, team building and all that stuff. Jake, of course, can confirm that the Army does a whole lot more of that, both at and after boot camp for them, right?
Yeah, well, you'd be surprised. During boot camp, yes, or I called it boot camp. I'm surrounded by these Navy guys, and it's seeping into my brain. But anyway, in basic training, we do a lot of drill and ceremony, D&C. And we have a drill competition between the platoons, find out who is the best drill from the platoons. They all stink, but we kind of give them the, okay, yeah, good for you award. but afterwards, you don't really, unless you're going to a formation, you don't really march anywhere. It's just sort of, hey, get there.
When you're in the Navy, we're going to march on a ship. There's no place on, okay, if you're on an amphib or an aircraft carrier,
then
the hangar deck, I guess you could. You could go like 100 yards and then turn and then come back. It doesn't really work very well. And the only time I remember it was at A school, where you go to learn the Defense Information School to learn how to be a military journalist and photographer. The Navy never marched to school. Then my class got into a whole bunch of trouble in the last few weeks we were there. That caused everybody to have to march, and I guess that continued on because they didn't want, you know, sailors wandering into the school hungover and things like some people in my class. Never me. I would never.
Same
never,
with me. When ever. I went, never.
No, I never got in trouble. I never did anything like that.
I actually never did. When I was in AIT and when I was in like a warrior leaders course and advanced leaders course, I never really drank or anything like that. Never got in trouble. I was just the quiet guy who wanted to study and get out, get over it.
They made fun of me at my VFW post because I had like 4 or 5 good conduct medals. I think it's 4. I think you get one every 3 years.
Something
so
like that,
I had like 4 of them, and they were like 4 good conduct medals. I ain't even got 1. Look at you, goody two shoes. I'm like, hey, well, you know, it wasn't that I was particularly good. It's that I was good at not getting caught
exactly.
in all the stuff I was doing. So this parade issue, I understand what you're saying. And I think for most people involved, in theory, I can see why some people might think it's a good idea. In practice, I think the military would want very little to do with it. Also, these big 4th of July national events. Growing up in the New York City area, the city of Stamford, Connecticut, where I grew up, is only, you know, half hour, 45 minutes outside of New York, depending on how you want to get there. People would ask, like, oh, have you ever gone to the fireworks on the 4th of July in New York? No, I don't want to be anywhere near that. Hey, have you ever gone to New Year's Eve at Times Square? I said, no. And no one who is there is from the New York City area. We don't do it. So we've got interesting input from people on this. And Rear Admiral Kirby, of course, retired Rear Admiral, who is one of the former chiefs of information, spokesman for Defense Department, State Department, for the Navy, saying, hey, we don't need this. We've got other things that our military needs.
Yeah.
Let's take care of that before we worry about a parade. The argument that can be made against that, if you are pro-parade, is, hey, why can't we do both? Why can't we have a budget and a parade? Jonathan, though, with it doesn't work on radio, but a dismissive look about this parade.
Eyes rolling. Yeah. I thought it would go through the microphone, but I guess it didn't.
It was almost loud enough. Joining us now is a man who is one of the two Army veterans behind the company that is known as Blanco Cigars. This is a cigar company where not one, but two Army veterans are heading things up over there. His name is David Blanco, and he joins us now in the morning briefing. David, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, my friend. How are you doing? From Dusseldorf, Germany.
You're in Dusseldorf, Germany. Okay. We thought you might be down in Miami there. I know that you're from that area, and we thought maybe you were calling in from down there having some phone trouble thanks to the storms. But, David, what are you doing over in Dusseldorf?
A bunch of things. Primarily, we're over here for the European Cigar Trade Show, which is going to be in Dortmund and begins tomorrow. We're also over here seeing a bunch of our distributors in various countries throughout Europe. And it also happens to be the anniversary of the Market Garden operation. So we're doing some celebrating over here with some other military forces as well.
That is very cool. Of course, Operation Market Garden, one of the important milestones of World War II, taking place within the European theater. David Blanco is now working with Blanco Cigars, his family's company. But prior to that, David, you were serving in the United States Army. Can you tell us just a little bit about your service, where you served, when, and what you did?
Sure, I'll be happy to share some of that with you. I joined the military in right after high school, actually, in 1989, so I'm giving up my age real quickly there. I enlisted into the airborne infantry and volunteered for all kinds of stuff that I had no idea what I was volunteering for, raising my hand, which I learned later never to do again. I used my GI Bill to go to school and get my degrees, continued serving as an Army reservist, National Guard for a short period of time because there were some drawdowns in the 90s. So I went from reserve to guard and then back to the reserve. And then, of course, 9/11 happened and did some more active duty time over there and went to the sandbox, as we call it, for a while. My father as well, by the way, you mentioned one of two of veterans running this company. My father, the president of the company, also served 27 years and was also in Iraq while I was in Afghanistan. So our family history in the military goes deep, and as a matter of fact, I'm still an active reservist in the Army as today. So
really a family business while you were in the military, and you still are in the military, but while your father was in, and then moving to the family business outside of the military, of course, being Blanco Cigars. Now, David, when you, transitioned from being in Iraq, you know, active duty, deploying, activated reservist, when your father transitioned from being in the military to he is now retired, I believe, when the two of you transitioned, what was that like, particularly knowing that you had this family business that you wanted to be involved in? What's that transition period like for someone who's going into the family business?
Well, I'll be honest with you, the transition with the war in particular, I mean, when I say war, I mean 9/11, obviously. That was a very difficult time and period. We actually had to close the doors for 2 years. So we literally had to, as many of us did in this country that were in similar positions, no matter what our jobs were, or if we worked for other people or we had our own business, we simply had to walk away. The call to arms came. We put on our uniforms and we marched. And that's what we did. And our story is one of many. Transitioning back, however, to the civilian side, coming back and reopening our company after 2 years of being closed was a little bit more difficult and complicated because with any product, whether it be an alcoholic beverage or a cigar or any type of product you have on the market, you lose market share. And we basically had to start all over again from scratch after starting our company in 1998, closing the doors 2001, and then reopening it back late 2003, 2004. So, but since then, it's been full steam ahead. And what's 2004 to now, that's 13 years. Boy, time flies, and we're doing very well, and we continue to grow the markets worldwide, not just in the United States. We're in Canada, not only Europe. We've opened up some Asian markets, Australia, even have a market in Africa as we speak, and the Middle East is our next target as of this year.
Having a president of the company in your father, Cesar Blanco, who is, again, former United States Army, and having you as the vice president who is in the Army, I'm getting the feeling that Blanco Cigars may have a little bit of a military feel to it. Have you guys been able to transition some of the things that you learned in the Army into how you do business at Blanco Cigars?
Absolutely. So, yes, we have a product and a passion and a family heritage in the tobacco industry. Our family has a Cuban heritage, so our family's grown tobacco for many years and make cigars for many years, many generations. I'm the fifth generation. But above and beyond the product, this industry, as I just mentioned to you, is a world market. So logistics, logistics, logistics. I move things all over the world. Through customs, and we deal with our facility is a U.S. customs bonded warehouse, for example. So we have not only the U.S. market to contend with the federal government and all its various assets that we have to abide by different rules, whether it's the ATF, customs, and a few others as well. And then there's state when we talk about tobacco. But then there's the international markets with different duanas, as they call them, or customs agents in Europe. For example, we have a warehouse just north of Paris that we utilize. We have a distributor in Canada, so we have to figure out what the laws are and regulations and how to move things. So there's a lot of logistics involved. So we've been able to transition our logistical skills and organizational skills with regard to staffing, for those of you in the Army, the staff, S1, S2, S3, S4, we have logistics issues, we have administrative issues. So we've transitioned those people in positions, similar format. And actually, the people that work for our company, most of them, are Army veterans themselves. So they're very used to and adept in understanding how we operate.
And how do you think that benefits you, having veterans on staff, being veterans who are running the company? What is the biggest benefit that you see from that overall?
They understand not just dedication, but loyalty to the operation. They're willing to go the extra mile to accomplish the mission, whatever the mission is put in front of them. And we as owners are also understanding that we expect nothing less of our employees that we do not expect of ourselves, and we lead by example. I think that is the biggest caveat I could put on that one.
You know, in an era where I think most people think of cigars and they think of course, Cuba, they think of the Central America, they don't necessarily think of America as a place that is producing a lot of cigars. So how big is the cigar industry within the United States?
Well, the industry is one of the largest consumers of premium cigars in the world. Obviously, Cuban cigars are not permitted for any type of market share because of the current Cuban embargo that is still in place.
Right.
But as a result, the rest of the Central and Caribbean basin have pretty much taken over that market share within the United States. The Cubans' cigars are still dominant in other parts of the world, Europe, Asia, the Middle East. However, we're making inroads throughout the world with what they call New World cigars rather than the Cuban brands throughout the markets all over the world, not just in the United States. We are the largest consumers of premium cigars in the world, however, the U.S. market as a whole. So if that gives you any idea. Now, we are not the largest smoking population in the world. That would be China. And they actually grow tobacco than any other country on the planet, but it's primarily cigarette tobacco.
Right. Well, we're speaking with David Blanco. David is currently an active reserve officer in the U.S. Army, has served in Iraq. His father, Cesar, the president of the company, retired from the United States Army as well. And as he just told us, many of his employees are veterans themselves. Now, David, for those who, may be part of a family business, maybe wanting to start a family business after they get out of the military, is there anything that you would recommend to them now that you have so much experience with this company that you, your father, and I believe even your grandfather was a part of? If someone's looking to try and start something similar in whatever industry, what advice would you give them?
Well, I would, number one, have a great business plan. Figure out exactly what your resources will be required to get this thing off the ground. Look for any type of federal or local municipality, state, or assistance that might be available to a veteran-owned company, and then look for other individuals to work in that company with you that are like-minded, i.e. other veterans. Surround yourself with like-minded people and look for the assets and resources available. And that is, if you have a solid business plan to go along with that, you have a recipe for success if you're willing to put in the time and the dedication that is required. And most veterans understand what it really takes to accomplish a mission. So if you really have the passion for whatever it is that you're looking to do, you can make it work.
Now, David, of course, as I mentioned, your father, Cesar, is the president of the company, himself an Army veteran. Is it ever difficult for you working with your dad, where he is the president of the company, he's able to pull rank on you that way, pull rank on you as dad, pull rank as the retired Army vet? Is it ever difficult for you in that relationship?
If I said no, I would be lying. it is difficult because there's a couple hats there, right? One, he's my father, and I will always be his son. Two, he had many more years of experience, due to his age. And as a result, he will always be my senior. But working together, we are learning to adapt and understand each other as partners, not only as family members, and whether or not we had senior rank or less rank in the military. But it is a challenge, as anybody in a family business can tell you. But you make it work. You know, you can't fire family, so you got to learn to work with them.
That's very true. I mean, firing dad, not really an option, particularly when he's the president of the company. And we're speaking
him firing me.
Yeah, well, hey, you know what? Actually, since he's the president, that sounds like it may be a little bit more possible. But we're speaking with the vice president of Blanco Cigars, David Blanco. He and his father, Cesar, both serving in the United States Army. David, still an active reservist. His father retired from the Army, and now running the family business of Blanco Cigars. David, we're just about out of time, so if people are interested in finding out about more about you, more about your dad, and more about Blanco Cigars, where can they go to do so?
Well, our website is blancocigars.com, common spelling, blancocigars.com. I'm also on every aspect of social media you can think of, Facebook, David Blanco, Blanco Cigars. My Twitter is David Blanco at Blanco Cigars. My Instagram would be David Blanco 007. How'd you like that one?
That's a pretty good one. We've been speaking to David Blanco of Blanco Cigars here on the Morning Briefing. Big thanks to our guests, the good folks from Bunker Labs DC, the American Legion, and of course our own Jake Hughes, who we're following that progress of how he's doing with his efforts to actually quit smoking, and Jonathan Kopanger with his input on everything taking place over at the VA. This has been your Wednesday edition of the Morning Briefing. Thursday edition coming your way tomorrow, 7 a.m. See you then.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.